My name's Sean Collier, alone again. Yeah, but not for all of this episode. Let's do things a little differently. Here's what's going on. Let me tell you about my life. This is the week of unnecessary sequels. You know unnecessary sequels. You've seen them. Films like The Rage, Carrie 2, or any movie about Jaws that isn't Jaws. Or Blade Runner 2049. Yeah, I said it. There are lots of unnecessary sequels in the world. And this week, as it happened, I was scheduled to see unnecessary part twos on three consecutive nights. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. An unnecessary sequel on each night. You're going to go through the whole week with me right now on You Can't Handle the Truth. You can't handle the truth. You can't handle the It is You Can't Handle the Truth for Friday, July 20th. Oh, do I need gas? No, I'll make it. Yeah, I'm in the car. Look at that. Friday, July the 20th, 2018. Here once again, coming to you live from the Honda Civic. Whole run of this podcast, same car. I know. Here's the story, folks. Nothing that I'm seeing this week was really worth an episode. Didn't do an episode last week. Aaron and I watched Skyscraper. It happened. That's a movie, all right. You can't say it's not a movie. I didn't want to do an episode on it this week. It was just so remarkable that one night after the next, just three in a row. Of something part two, something part two, something part two, none of which had any solid reason for existing. So I anticipate a sort of a slow descent into madness over the course of this week, and you will get to come along for the ride as I become more and more disillusioned with the movie industry. I mean, that's really my entire life in a lot of ways. I won't be alone, at least for one part of this three-part chain episode. I will bring somebody along for the ride, maybe for two parts. We'll get to that later, because that is not tonight. Tonight is the first part. Tonight we kick it off. Tonight we talk about The Equalizer 2. Yeah, we didn't even really bother with, like, you know, you know, if it were the 90s, there would be a pun title like Equalizer, two plus two equals death. I couldn't riff anything good there. Equalizer, Denzel Rising. See, that's not, you know, that's more like now. Now it would just have Equalizer, ominous phrase. You know what I mean? It would be like Equalizer. Wrath of the Sky. That's what it would be called. But no, we just Antoine Fuqua and the producers of the film just went very direct, called it Equalizer 2. And of the three sequels that will be discussed in this week's episode, perhaps this is the most understandable. You know, it's not exactly anything that anybody needed by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, okay. This had a Denzel Washington action movie. People liked it. It made enough money. You established this character, of course, borrowed from a TV series, remake of a TV series, reboot, I guess. And you think, well, we could certainly make some more money off of this. This seems like the most justifiable of the three sequels we will talk about this week. I had no recollection of what happened in the first Equalizer at all. I remembered it starred Denzel Washington as a man with a particular set of skills, and that he had a very neat apartment, and he liked to read books. And at a diner, he met Chloe Grace Moretz, who was in some trouble, and he helped her out. That's all I could tell you about the first Equalizer. This assumes that you remember more things than that. Like, this assumes that you remember why he had a particular set of skills and what those skills were and how they were applied and, you know, like some of his backstory, which I think that's a little presumptuous. I don't think anyone in the audience is going to remember anything from the first Equalizer other than, well, Denzel's got some people to attack. We assume they are the bad guys and he's the good guy. And that's about the extent of that. So, yes, this could have been a little bit simpler. The Equalizer 2 could have. Certainly could have been shorter. 2 hours and 1 minute, the runtime on the Equalizer 2. You know, I make the joke, particular set of skills, that this is Denzel's Taken franchise. And it's really just Taken with some extra pretension, honestly. I mean, there are some very nice scenes in it, mostly just of Denzel Washington acting. You know, I mean, he gets restrained, angry, you know, that kind of like, I'm furious, but I'm still, you know, mostly in control, that thing. Oh, this had 2 hours and 12 minutes. No, it wasn't that long. It's not 2 hours and 12 minutes since I walked in there now. Unless there was a vast post-credit scene I am unaware of. Oh, no, I'm looking at the IMDb for the original Equalizer. That's the problem here. I struggle with the internet, the podcast. Like I said, it's basically, you know, a dressed up Taken in that it's got a good director, Antoine Fuqua. It has some good scenes with Denzel. They have a big supporting cast that includes Bill Pullman and Melissa Leo, and it's just Taken with higher production values. It really is. Again, it builds to a big Denzel versus a bunch of people in a crazy setting at the end, like the first one did. Again, there is a teenaged character that needs guidance. And, you know, it's an action movie. He's got some bad guys to deal with. He's going to figure it out. And when he figures it out, boy, is there going to be punching. There's going to be punching and stabbing, light shooting. Less shooting than Skyscraper, actually. Skyscraper was like Grand Theft Auto The Rock. Oh, that'd be fun. Picture that. It's Grand Theft Auto, but it's entirely on Alcatraz. I would play that game. People say, oh, I want my open world to be massive. And I do. You know, I get it. You know, I'm playing Breath of the Wild. I could just run forever. But imagine if you had all that going on just on the little island and you really had... That's interesting. That's an interesting concept. It's more interesting than the Equalizer 2. Action aficionados, if you want to see a movie this weekend, you get to see this one. Denzel is great no matter what he's doing. Look, last year there was a movie called Roman J. Israel Esquire. It was a bad movie. It was an actively bad movie. Denzel got nominated for Best Actor for it because that's just what he does and who he is. There's nothing more to it than that. So, you know, you're a fan, you're a Denzel fan, go see The Equalizer 2. I hope I'm wrong. I strongly believe that, sure, why the hell not, will be the strongest recommendation you get out of me in this three-part unusual structure episode, You Can't Handle the Truth. I don't know why I tagged it there. There's going to be a sound effect or a little cue. Something's going to happen to indicate that things have changed. And then I'll be back, and it'll be tomorrow, but not in your ears. In your ears, it'll be today. Unless, theoretically, you paused it now, went to bed. You know what? I'll be back in a minute. Well, boy, that was something. I don't know what... I don't know how I feel. I don't... There was... I just saw Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again. You have to say it with that cadence. And I thought... I really expected to be the most cynical, dismissive, you know, I hated the first movie, and it's not, listen, it's not that I don't like ABBA. Who doesn't enjoy ABBA from time to time? I just didn't like the first movie at all, and I thought, how are you making a sequel to a jukebox movie? You've already used all the good songs, and I expected to be so cynical, and I was. And yet there were these little bits where I was like, oh, this is great entertainment. I wish that there were someone here to help me through these emotions. What? Missy Marino?
Sean Collier?
Where did you come from?
I came from the seat that was right next to your body in Mamma Mia. Here we go again.
Oh, great.
Hi.
I knew you were there. I just forgot for the sake of this trope.
Oh, you nailed that trope.
Thank you.
Now I'm going to do a flying cartwheel into a Greek ocean.
Yay.
Hashtag things that happen in the movie.
Give me your spot reaction.
I want to go again.
That's... Why aren't there cameras here?
Thank you.
Say, for like, remember when you would get used to get those commercials in the lobby where they would ask random people and be like, and it would just cut to, it would be a scene, and then it would just be you. I want to go again. Wink.
And then I'd be wearing like a cardigan and clutching it and be like, I'm wild, just like Meryl Streep. person.
No, you would for some reason be wearing a Tasmanian devil t-shirt.
Oh my God,
like
always.
Sweatshirt, like a big, I don't want to run over this man on a bike.
You are so
He's
kind.
Right there. We're in the car.
We are, because we couldn't wait to get in our wheels and explore the whole world, just like this movie taught us to.
Did you enjoy the first movie?
Let me remember.
I did not, but I think I was like 22.
Oh,
and
you
I think that's when this came out, and I went, like, I saw it at a drive-in with one of my comedy friends, and we just cut up on it, like, we're too cool for ABBA, and so maybe that influenced it, but I didn't
Funny
really
enough,
like the
you were singing so loud with every word in the theater, so that's shocking to believe.
Yeah. No, do you remember the first one, Will?
I do remember it. I have to admit, we know I'm like a musical theater junkie.
Sure.
But mostly, I'm not like, but I am also like a musical theater junkie who loves to laugh at the thing they're addicted to.
Yeah.
And I am not a fan of the musical Mamma Mia, I'm sorry everyone, or the first movie. Because I'm not crazy in love with jukebox musicals. It just, except for, no, that's different. I was going to say Singing in the Rain.
No,
was
that's
different,
definitely different.
But that as tech. I mean, would be one because all those songs were existing and I forget their names. Oh, and I'm so mad. The writers of that.
It's not Candor and Ebb, but it's somebody
it's
like that.
Green and somebody or something like that. But they had to write a story around those songs.
Right. And if it's a new term. If you're not familiar with a jukebox musical is Mamma Mia, which is a musical written around ABBA songs, or like Rock of Ages is written around classic rock songs, and this is a thing now where there's one, and there's a lot of them.
There's
one
a
for
time.
Queen, and there's one for
Billy
Motown, and
Joel. But that one's more a dance show, and it's different. It's interesting how different people approach how to make their jukebox musical different or whatever. Different.
I guess Jersey Boys is probably the biggest
definitely.
One. Other than,
yeah, but see, and their vehicle is an autobiography,
right.
Which makes sense. Like I said, the Billy Joel Moving Out is a dance show with a guy on the piano, and the dancers kind of tell out his story. That's why this one, it's just like so shoehorned and But it's also super simple. The wacky three dads thing is okay. But here's one, actually, a revelation I had during this one.
Yeah.
A slight one, anyways. Especially the very finale, which I'm going to just spoil, is like,
yeah,
woo-hoo.
I think we can spoil the Mamma Mia sequel, and yeah. Most of this is in the trailer.
Right. It's just basically, oh, everyone's dancing and happy. That's...
Yeah.
And it reminded me... We won't talk, I guess, about, like, the events that take place
in
this movie.
Oh, no, I will, but go on.
Okay. It reminded me of, like, a Shakespearean comedy.
That's how it's plotted. It yeah. really is.
Because even, like, the sad stuff or the heart... I mean, there's still always sad, heartfelt, relational moments in Shakespeare, but it's always... We're breaking the fourth wall, like, and we're going to speak right to the audience in some up... high fashion, and then the very end, it was just felt like that. Oh, and here's all the characters you met. Doop, boop, boop.
No,
whether they're dead, alive, meeting their younger selves, all that stuff.
And don't get me wrong, it's not done well, but that's what they're going for. Yeah. The structure of a classic, you know, comedy of a Elizabethan comedy.
Yeah,
it's.
To be fair, I'm so lame, I guess, and I'm their target audience on a level where I'm like, oh, I'm like a middle-aged woman who loves music and humans and is like, I do wish the world was great. So there was like mom stuff, and I was just like, even though it's so outlandish, various yeah. aspects, I'm a sucker at the end of the day for nice music and people caring. Well, so I'm like, I'd rather watch this than like Trump the musical.
May it never happen. No, yes. may it happen, and may it like it's going to be like there's going to be a 7 foot tall drag queen
yes.
playing
oh
Trump,
my.
And it's just every song that he sings is like one of a whiny 90s alternative ballad
yeah.
about how he's great but no one notices.
Oh, actually, that's interesting that you're yeah. doing one from his perspective. I like that's an
yeah.
interesting take, because mine, of course, is. Like Rent, but everyone's like, how can we make street art to bring him to his knees?
Yeah, no, I don't.
There's many takes you can do.
Certainly.
To bring him to his knees.
Anyway, Mamma Mia.
Mamma Mia.
Look, here I go. It's,
thank you, yes.
It's not good. And a lot of it, is like, this is so, like, there's a lot of stretches where you're like, no, come on. Like
yeah.
There is like eye rolling 20 minute long chunks.
Oh.
Like, I mean, a lot of the contemporary plot line, you know, when she's on the outs, when Amanda Seyfried is on the outs with her.
Lover.
With her unremarkable mannequin
yeah.
of a husband. And
actually,
they do the,
not even really hot. Sorry, guy.
And they do.
I still love you, but no.
They do like the, oh, we're both sad number.
But the
that's
thing is,
so bad. Like,
it was devoid of emotion.
And
I don't get that. I'm like, that's not even on par with musical.
Right. And there were a lot of stretches. There's a subplot of this movie where it's like, oh, no, we have to save this horse. Like, and
this, it felt sometimes like an 11-year-old girl was like, her dad is rich and owns a movie studio, and she
yes.
just wandered into the, or even younger, like a 6-year-old, and just like kind of clomped into the editing room and was like, and then horses, and then beads, and then they go scuba with
and
the
are,
thing. Yeah,
and
it was just
a band.
Like, and then fireworks, and then wigs, and yeah, I was like, all right.
The
somebody
opening,
just
the song at the college graduation or whatever it was.
Oh my Lord! I was literally screaming, laughing. There were moments. This it was like synchronized swimming over bodies. Like
yes.
the amount of heavy lifting of camera work just to film these weird dances
and that were like dumb. That were like, this isn't good. This isn't, you know. And then, but then, like after an. After like 90 minutes of relentless positivity and the movie just being like, I'm nice. Do you like me? You're like, you're okay. You've got so much spunk, movie.
Yeah, you're right. That's true.
And then
it wore you down.
Well, and I'm going to spoil the like buy a ticket moment. Because I get it. For many people who listen, like, no, you don't go to see this. But if you are a lover of just pure and here's what I would compare it to. I'm going to do the comparison first,
yes,
then
please.
Say what I'm talking about. One of the worst movies I've watched beginning to end was Sex and the City 2.
Oh, God. But see, I love Jennifer Hudson, but also she was not great in it.
Like, and
it was
right.
strange. No, I hear you, yes.
And like 15 minutes into that movie, Liza Minnelli shows up and
right.
sings Single Ladies. And I don't care. Like, I don't particularly have any feelings about Liza Minnelli.
I have all the feelings about Liza Minnelli.
But even as someone who does not, like, is not waiting for a Liza Minnelli appearance, I was like, thank God an entertainer walked in. Thank God someone
yeah.
who can sing and perform and
it has,
capture
like,
the
charisma.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's this running thing in Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, that Meryl Streep's mother is someone who never shows up, who didn't show
right.
up for her daughter.
But this was, people know this. You're not spoiling
No, this
anything.
Isn't a spoiler. It's in the trailer.
She's in the trailer, yeah.
And so this is referred to every now and then. And
yes.
then, you know, with one reel left, the helicopter lands.
Oh, gosh.
And here's Meryl Streep's mother, Amanda Seyfried's grandmother, played by Cher.
Cher. But to be... And that was like, yes, queen.
And it and it's great. And if that was it, it would be like, you know, it was good to see Cher. But then there's this other little subplot that's been going on where there's this mysterious older gentleman who refers to his long-lost love.
And it is, who's that actor?
It's actually the guy from Sex and the City, isn't
no,
it?
No. It's the guy from... This is so terrible. He's Michael Corleone's son in Godfather 3. That's... Who's that actor?
Keep working. I'm both driving and recording, so you work
yeah,
it out.
True.
So there's this
Andy Garcia.
Andy Garcia.
Andy,
I was getting him crossed with what's that guy, Mr. Big, who's also
yeah.
on Law and Order. They look
so
alike.
So I was like Andy Garcia. I was
yeah.
like blown away that whole time.
So this whole movie, he's like referring to his long lost love, and then Cher sees him and yells out,
Fernando.
Which, by the way. I don't listen to ABBA every day, but Fernando, kind of love that,
yeah,
that song.
Yeah, that's a good.
And so then Cher sings Fernando, and
with
it's like
Andy Garcia.
It's like I should have paid $90 for this. She tore it up. That was fantastic.
It's like
it was like the movie's here, you know?
Yeah, it was definitely. I mean, and I like well, and Cher can stop any traffic. She can stop
right.
any scene. She can stop whatever she wants and be and share it up. So you're right that that part was like yes, and just seeing her and I was just gonna Google how old is she, and I'm gonna just say 110, 111.
How does she look? A little frozen.
A little, but
she is
also gorgeous, and she's icon. Like,
look, I know it is not actually cool to. It's not cool to rag on. People for getting plastic surgery. People can look the way
especially
they want to look.
Especially when you're Cher.
I want to warn you that she looks like someone doing a passing Cher impression while wearing a Cher mask.
Sean, guess how old she is.
80?
Nope.
84?
No.
Am I going in the wrong direction?
Wrong direction.
Like 75?
No.
Just tell me.
72.
Oh, she's younger than
yeah,
I thought.
Yeah, I'm actually blown away. So I just think. Ready for a crazy one? I think she's a beautiful older woman.
Oh, that is absolutely
so I don't
true.
Even think, now that I really look at it, I mean, yes, there's some plastic there, but I just think she's...
There's just a lot of her face that isn't moving anymore.
She still does live touring.
Yeah.
Well, that would be the case for Amanda's the whole movie, basically, until that one.
Right.
So I was
That's
serious.
True.
And I don't,
no.
I'm not hating on her because in my dream world, everyone's listening to this podcast and they're like, Missy's going to be in our next movie musical
yeah.
called... Not Trump the musical, but it'll be called like
it'll be
like New Kids on the Block the musical, and it's a storyline where
it's the new jukebox musical with the songs of Alanis Morissette
and New Kids on the Block.
It's a mashup.
Yes, and it's called Isn't It an Ironic Block? Thank you.
But why we have you on the show?
I know. well, no. Here's my other thought. So to shift gears. But also we're transitioning, just like one would in a musical.
Yeah.
Like, so yes, Fernando crushed. What's fun about jukebox musicals is seeing these songs maybe done a little differently or like you or what context are they putting them in? And there was there's a birth scene. I'm not going to get into it. Like, and I'm not telling you who or do whatever, blah, blah. But it was that choice of song with that was gorgeous. I think that was the most beautiful part of the movie. And I was going to say, I know we were discussing, oh, wait, which songs are they reusing or using? But what the ones they reused, they did use in different ways. Like we were saying, that sad little song Pierce sang.
Yes.
So to me, I was like, all right, I'm here for this. If you're, I want to hear your good shit. So,
right.
And if you repackage it in a different moment, or they had like some Parisian flares,
right,
stylized ones, some nice underscoring of it. So
that was ridiculous.
I know.
But yes.
Right. It's like still Mamma Mia. It's hilarious. Yeah. But I was like, okay, sure.
And I will. This is what I liked the best about the movie, and this is a genuine compliment. If you saw the first one, the plot of the first one was Amanda Seyfried is getting married and she's trying to figure out who her dad is. And this has a modern and a flashback plot. And the flashback plot is about Meryl Streep's character as a young woman played by Lily James is you know, meeting those three men. And it's this story about on this wild, I don't know, month in Greece where she kind of falls in love with these guys in rapid succession. And nowhere does anyone go, hey, you're fucking a lot. Like, it's actually a movie that's kind of sexually empowering.
Liberating,
for
yeah.
its female character. It's just like, yeah, she's having a time in just traveling the world, and she's having these romances, flings, and it's great. It's a beautiful thing, and that I liked. I genuinely liked that.
I love that. Good call.
And then Colin Firth fell off a dock into the river for no reason, and I was like, "Can we be serious?"
And there's pratfalls.
Let's tell another joke about cake. Oh, cake makes you feel better.
Okay, here's one other thing on that to do another segue transitional moment. I actually my favorite parts of the movie were the Christine Baranski and that other older woman. Like, I thought they were
very funny.
Amazing. You could tell they're pros. Christine is like an iconic Broadway star.
They were very funny
for her whole life.
They were very funny, and they were the younger versions of them were also very funny.
And talk about spot on casting.
Yes, absolutely.
So it was actually super fun. And obviously, who here is going into that being like, this better be some top stellar cinematic work, my friends?
I mean, no one. I do. It's at times like this that I'm like, you can be fun and good.
Hey, P.S., speaking of cinematic stellarness, I actually think the dances were great. If we're talking musical theater or musical components, I thought the choreography was fun, beautiful. I do think Lily, the main girl, often was overplaying stuff, and the choreo didn't come naturally, whereas you could see who the dancers were in the ensemble. So some things flowed easier. Sometimes she was over, like over laughing weirdly.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, relax. Or it didn't flow, whereas a lot of stuff I thought flowed really well. I love the costumes and the color. The whole movie, I thought that was fun.
Art like, direction,
high
sure.
theatrical.
Yeah.
Fun.
I can't be like, oh, you're going to be bored. You're going to have a bad time. It's fine.
And all the new stuff, like the horse.
Moments.
We were, like, delightfully laughing. Okay.
If you told me they were really trying to write in some ridiculous moments, I'd go, all right. Yeah. Okay.
But you know what's interesting? It was those felt like camp moments, campy moments, but not like camp where it's like, oh my god, I want to watch this forever, like Rocky Horror,
right,
or something where you're like, oh my god, I'm gonna call into it. They were legitimizing campy things, and I'm like, well, okay, no, just be dumb. They take it a little too seriously. That was my only like complaint. I'm like, if you're gonna be wacky, just be wacky. But anyways, but it was delightful, and I am grateful to have gone on a musical journey with you, Sean.
Well, thank you for being here. We gotta go. I still have another sequel to talk about on this episode. What will it be? You'll find out in just a moment. Until you do, here's Missy Marino to sing If I Could Turn Back Time.
If I could turn back time, I'd go to that movie again. And I watch it with my friend Sean Collier.
Okay, yeah, even more. I told you. Three sequels. It's been a long week, but we're here. Told you about The Equalizer 2 and Mamma Mia 2, and now Unfriended, Dark Web. It's the second Unfriended movie, because you remember the first one. No, you don't. No one does. And yet, it's a horror movie that you could make for a budget of, I don't know, a cup of coffee and a relatively late model iMac. I don't even think they're called iMacs anymore.
MacBook?
I mean, MacBook.
What do I know?
Look who it is. It's Jessica Semler, everybody.
Oh, hey.
You remember her from the solo episode, one of them Star Warses.
Yep.
I also saw it again, and yes, it was better the second time.
You know, I told you. Yep.
Once you know what nonsense to expect, you're like, okay, I can just evaluate the nonsense. But the first time, it was kind of like, what? And once that reaction goes away, I
actually almost cried at the second viewing. I'm not proud of it. But I actually had more feels, because I felt connected to the characters.
Oh, that's nice.
Yep.
I don't dislike that movie. It's just not, I don't want them to do anything else like that. We're here to talk about Unfriended Dark Web.
Mm.
What did you make of that experience?
There were laughs that were intentional that worked, and then there were lots of laughs that I don't think were purposeful.
No.
Yeah. Also, I kind of feel like I need to see Unfriended 1, because I feel like, no, this isn't going to spoil anything, but like there was no friending unfriending in this movie, so I was kind of waiting to see where that would fit in.
It's just the name. They are
all Dark Web.
They are completely unrelated stories. In fact, unless I'm remembering it one, I think the first one had like supernatural elements.
That's what I thought too, which was kind of what I was waiting for.
They were being cyber haunted,
yeah,
by their dead friend, and she was killing them off one by one. Thus, that was the unfriending. She was
hashtag cyberbullying.
It was about cyberbullying,
yep,
and in a very unsatisfying and heavy-handed way. But the only thing that was kind of good about it was that it was cool that you were staring at a laptop screen from beginning to end. It was just a different way of doing a found footage horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
You encountering that for the first time, I still think that's okay.
I actually enjoyed it. I mean, I enjoyed it for what it was, which was a movie that was from the, you know, perspective of a laptop.
Yeah. I know that a lot of critics were like, oh, it's just like staring at, it's very unnatural to just feel like you're staring at someone's laptop screen. And I'm like, no, it's really not. If you grew up in our generation, like, it feels very natural to stare at a laptop screen for an hour and a half.
Absolutely. Much bigger screen than we're used to looking at. So, I mean, I think it was, you know, it was fine.
You watch a lot of horror movies, many with me.
Yeah.
Did this work for you as horror, or?
Honestly, it did not strike me as horror.
Yeah.
I think it was kind of like, again, I haven't seen the first Unfriended, but it's like, okay, this melded some episodes of Black Mirror.
Yeah.
I would say MTV Scream, which I think I'm one of the only people that's over 25 that's watched that.
You told me, and you were very convincing, and I didn't listen. Sorry.
Everyone who's listening.
Yeah.
MTV Scream season 1 and 2. It's amazing. Anyways. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't take a whole lot to scare me, but I was definitely, you know, jumping at different points, and I can tell you I'm going to, you know, tape something over my, like, my camera on my laptop again.
I don't think the exact plot of Unfriended Dark Web is happening in real life, but yeah, they do say you should tape over that little camera.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, I don't know what I would be showing. I mean, on my phone. I mean, if people are hacking my phone, they're seeing all kinds of things.
Sure.
Yeah, it was a movie. I don't know. It was like...
You can't deny that. It was a movie.
This was better than the first one.
Really?
Yeah, definitely.
Oh,
The first one was just poor... It was just an idea poorly executed, and I think... We did an episode on it that might still be available. We're not sure whether or not anyone can hear our archives. It had a really unsatisfying ending, and it kind of built up a lot of mystery that didn't pay off. And this one, at least, I was like, it got where it was going.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
It was kind of watchable. I wasn't bored in there.
I wasn't bored. I thought it was interesting enough. I do feel, and I mean, I guess you can say this about just about every horror movie. The characters, given the situation of what they were in, a lot of them still behaved very, like, in ways I don't buy people would be acting if they felt they were in a situation of danger. And
yeah.
I don't know that I can, you know, say more without spoiling.
There's an unpleasant, like, stakes jump. Like, 1 minute everything is fine and something weird is going on, but we don't really know what it is. And it's literally a minute and a half before everybody's going to die. It's not... This is missing its second act, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if these characters had kind of, like, become vaguely aware of the fact that they were in some shit, and then, like, their reactions ramped up a little bit...
There was none of that.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Completely anonymous and interchangeable cast. Just
yep.
Get any 7 theater majors from any school.
I will say, diversity.
Yeah, that was nice.
An actual, I don't think this is spoiling either, lesbian couple.
Yeah, that was very nice.
Yeah, I love that.
That's the unexpected theme of the 3 sequels this week. All had very diverse casts. Equalizer 2 kind. No, Equalizer 2 was fine. Yeah, there was some diverse casting. And Mamma Mia, I'll tell you this later. I literally said it 10 minutes ago as people are listening. It's not like I'm referring to a past episode. This is the same episode. I'm not going to talk about Mamma Mia anymore.
Here we go again.
I don't know. Would you tell anybody to watch Unfriended 2?
I mean, once it hits Netflix... I would watch the hell out of that again. I would feasibly watch that again. I don't know that I would tell anyone to go spend money to go see that.
No, certainly not.
I think I could do that.
Is MoviePass still functional?
It is. They kind of switched it up a bit, so it's not, you know, I can't go see Han Solo. I can't go see Solo 4 times. I have to pretend that I'm seeing other movies. Don't report me.
Oh. You can only use a MoviePass for a movie once.
Yes. And now you have to take a picture of the ticket as soon as you buy it.
Oh, this is falling apart.
It's falling apart immediately for me because, like, that's the whole beauty of, you know, MoviePass is that I get to see Star Wars, you know, 4 to 6 times.
So, but you can, you can say one for Hotel Transylvania 3 and take a picture of your Hotel Transylvania 3 ticket and then walk into Solo.
Yeah, you could do that. Yeah.
Not that you would cheat the system in that way.
I would, listen, I'm a lady of class.
Right.
And I would never.
Of course.
Ever.
See, but you know, you've seen what's happened. Like, Cinemark has a service and AMC has a service and the chains have figured out that people want this and they're going to do a better version of it and that's going to be the end of it.
I mean, sounds good to me.
Yeah.
I'm all about going to the movies all the time and not paying $20 each time.
So if you have some service that allows you to see movies basically as you like, maybe Unfriended
you're
a horror fan. Otherwise, here's what I would tell you. Watch it on your laptop. That'd be fun, right?
Very meta.
Yeah, like wait 3 months and watch it. And like I guarantee every 10 minutes you're going to try to click on a different window, forgetting that you're looking at a movie and not your computer screen.
Yes.
That'll be fun. That'll be fun for you. Well, thank you for weighing in, Jess.
Of course, anytime.
Any other movie topics you want to express while you're here?
I don't know if this is in this vein, but I'm really glad that Scarlett Johansson or her publicist at least convinced her to not trash her career and she dropped out of that movie.
Yeah, if so, that could have happened before Ghost in the Shell, that would have been good.
Would have been ideal.
But better late than never.
Yeah.
Like, hey, you've got enough money and can make and pretty much any movie you want. Go do something else.
Literally anything else.
If you haven't followed that whole thing, I won't tell you to Google it now because it kind of took care of itself.
It did. Yeah, it did.
Yeah. That's very nice. I'm really glad someone asked me to talk about that movie because it has, like, some vague Steelers connection.
Oh, gosh.
Like, that, like it's set in Pittsburgh, and this individual ran, I guess, mobbed up massage parlors or something.
Oh.
And allegedly there was some, like, paper-thin tie to the Steelers, and someone was like, come on to I don't know if it was a podcast or radio or whatever, and talk about this and the Steelers. And I said no because I don't really, like, do football stuff that often because I stopped watching football because of the concussion stuff. And so, like, when people are like, do you want to comment on the Steelers? I'm like, yeah, really, no, I'm faking it. And, you know, it would be hypocritical of me to, you know. And then, like, 2 days later, the Scarlett Johansson thing happened. So it was like, I'm glad I didn't weigh in on this movie with a completely inappropriate and irrelevant take. I'm glad I didn't do that. Anyway, I'm glad she quit.
Me too.
Yeah. What's for great trans representation in film?
Oh God.
See A Fantastic Woman from last year. Ooh, that was great. Did you see that?
No, I haven't even heard of that.
Oh, it was I believe Chilean film, South American in any case. It was nominated for Best Foreign Language Feature, and the actress, Daniela Vega, a woman who is trans, should have been nominated for Best Actress. Like, she was on my ballot for, she was number one on my ballot for Best Actress. She was not nominated, but she did present at the Oscars, which was really awesome.
That's fantastic.
And that movie is great. And Tangerine. Did you see Tangerine?
No.
I'll tell you about that one later.
Okay.
Okay, so I watched those three sequels, and the odd thing is, my reaction to all of them was like, ah, fine. Like, I expected to just go more and more crazy all week, and instead I'm like, you know what, okay. Equalizer 2 was like a fine action movie if you need an action movie. Mamma Mia was bad but so charming that you can't hate it. So if you like musicals and fun and nice things, if you enjoy things that are nice and sunny and just want to listen to ABBA songs while staring at Greece, the country, not the substance, then go and see it. And if you need a horror fix, Unfriended 2 wasn't awful. So the result of sequel week is like, meh, which is the appropriate reaction to sequels.
Yes, absolutely.
And Jess, just tell us what Unfriended Dark Web taught you, and then we'll end the podcast. What is the life lesson?
The life lesson would be, one, cover all of your cameras, and two, don't steal laptops, which is ironic advice for me right now. Nope. Thank you.